they were quite interested in getting the cider trade, and I'm an open book. I gave them my license to look at, all my pro forma sheets and all that, and I was very encouraging for anyone to get in the cider business in this neck of the woods. So, but they got a great retail area, probably even a little nicer than mine, and they've kept their cider footprint pretty small. It's mostly sold out of their tasting room, but there's some other spots here and there in the city where they sell cider too. So,
what year did they open, Robinette's?
Robinette's opened in 1970.
Wow. Well, what year did you go commercial?
Our commercial retail space opened in 71.
71. But so, and commercial cider production?
Commercial cider, 2002. So. Charlie in the back.
Do they have a sluicing operation for mining at their place too?
They might actually have a sluicing operation. It's very possible. They got a lot of cool stuff.
Episode 130. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. That fellow that you heard bringing us into this year's podcast is Mike Beck of Uncle John's Hard Cider, based in St. John's, Michigan. This week's chat is going to be featuring voices from Michigan during the Grand Rapids Cider Week, and I'll also be speaking about GlenCap, which is the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition. So stay tuned for that, but in the meanwhile, some updates out and about in Ciderville. There are always fun events happening out and about in Ciderville, and this one in particular is a little bit closer to home to me. But perhaps you are in my spot of Ciderville. So if you are, and even if you're not, you should know about Spoke and Spy Ciderworks in Middletown, Connecticut, because probably some point in your travels about, you will be landing at Bradley Field in Hartford or cruising up to Cider Days and going past Middletown, Connecticut, where Ron, who is known as Drink Cider on all his different social media networks. Well, in another week, on June 8th, which is a Friday night from 5 to 9 p.m., Ron Cezanne and Michael Shea, who is known on Instagram as Cider of the Night, they have a little bottle share happening. So again, that's June 8th from 5 to 9 p.m. And the only thing they ask is to bring two bottles of cider to share, and they need to be 750-ml bottles. Though I imagine if you don't have a 750-ml bottle, but you have a couple more bottles of different sizes, nobody's going to get booted out the door. Anyways, so do that. Go to Middletown, Connecticut. I used to work there for years. It's right along the banks of the Connecticut River. I think they probably still have a ferry that goes out there. There's some good beer scene there, too, so you could have a full bevy of fun in Middletown. And definitely stopping at the Spoke and Spy Ciderworks June 8th, 5 to 9 p.m. I'll put a link in the show notes to Spoke and Spy Ciderworks for this here episode 130. Cheese puffs, really light, kind of crispy snack food, goes so well with cider. I'm enjoying them with some James Creek Cider House. Their Southern Star cider was aged in bourbon barrel. Not that it needs any food at all to make it taste good, but oh my goodness. James Creek Cider House, Moore County, South Carolina. Thank you for getting me through this podcast. Thank you. The Hoon Valley Midwinter Festival is taking place in July. It's from the 13th, which is a Friday, to Sunday, the 15th, in Tasmania. So if you're out that way, but more importantly, even if you can't get that way anytime soon, it does happen once a year in the middle of the winter in Australia, the Southern Hemisphere, right? They have this event that really caught my eye. It would be so much fun to be able to attend. It's where they are inviting word weavers to tell, in the most creative way possible, a 7-minute story to compete for over $800 in cash prizes and the coveted Hoon Pin Cup, handcrafted by local maker Brad Moss. Now, I'm not sure what... Oh, the Hoon Pine Cup. It's a pine cup. I think it sounds like they made... Brad made a cup out of pine. I wonder what kind of pine trees they have in Tasmania. Isn't that interesting? So that's happening. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that in case you make it out there, just to kind of follow along in that story. What an opportunity. You know, they have a big bonfire. It's really almost like their own mini version of Burning Man. I'm sure it's not to that extent, but wow. And if you want to know a little bit more about Tasmania and the folks out there, you could always listen to Sam Reed of Willie Smith's. That was episode 31. He's also the president of Cider Australia. Hugh McKellar, you could always find him online at Real Cider Reviews. Hugh and I did an episode number 59. And then Patrick from Simple Ciders, they are based in Tasmania, really nice people making lovely ciders, and that is episode 88. So I do like following what's happening over there on the other side of Ciderville from me. Some pretty neat stuff, and how innovative, having a storyteller's cup and having prizes. I bet some of that prize is cider. I'd have to go over there in a boat, sail in a boat. Who wants to do that? Sign me up. I think I'm primed enough now to talk about West Michigan and my trip out there last week, because it was a heck of a lot of fun and a lot happened. It's almost like, where do I start? So when in doubt, start from the beginning to bring you up to date. We left on Monday, which was May 14th at night, drove all the way through the night. It was myself and Team New England. There was four of us, Charlie Ochowski, Mark Griska, William Grota, and Joby Wilson. It was kind of a cool evening ride. In fact, in the morning on our way, as we were kind of pulling up into Michigan and going by Temperance, Michigan, go figure, right? We recorded a Cider Chat Live podcast. So to bring you up to date there, there's two podcasts now. There's Cider Chat, which is this main podcast that you're listening to. And now I have this additional one called Cider Chat Live, where I'm able to record kind of on the go a little bit more with very little editing and send it out. So on that episode, and I'll put a link in the show notes, you'll actually be able to download it right from the show notes if you like. We talked about the judges who were attending Glencap. Because I was curious, as probably you might be too, if you're sending your ciders, who are these people that are judging? Where are they coming from? What's their background? What, more importantly, is their expertise? Because if you're putting your, you know, coveted cider into the one, you know, like your baby, your cider, into this competition, you want to know who's judging and to what standard. So we talked about that, and we also talked about Michigan apples as we know them, a little bit of the flavor profile versus New England style, because there is this kind of conversation of what is heritage apples, what is heirloom. Is a heritage apple becoming a heritage apple every day once it turns like 100 years old? So this is kind of an interesting area right now, and not one that's necessarily clear to myself, although some people feel very clear. I'm going to save that conversation for a later date, but we did talk about that a bit on that episode.
Are we in Michigan yet?
No, we're not.
Are we in Michigan yet?
We're in Temperance. Oh my God, Temperance, exit
right,
3.
Up.
Go by.
Speed up, Joby,
by.
Quick. And then a Glencap gold medalist, Zach Oster from Michigan. So if he got a gold at Glencap, he certainly knows how to judge cider. At least he knows how to make it.
Well, it certainly does, yeah.
And then how does this guy... Oh, sorry.
Oh, We skipped somebody.
We came from the Cider Institute of North America, yeah. Bridget O'Keen. Mm-hmm. And then this Olchowski.
Charlie Olchowski is in the car with us. And Charlie, can you just give us a little bit of background of who you are?
Well, I'm a human being
on the planet Earth.
I don't know. I guess I'm best known for starting Cider Days with Paul Carenti. And I've been involved with cider education and cider judging for probably 30 or more years. And I don't know. I just love coming out to Glen Cap, and it's been a wish for a while. And cider... It's great to see what's happening with the whole cider scene.
You're also a BJCP certified judge, right?
No, I'm actually a national. I've got enough points to be a master judge, but I have to take the exam over again, but I haven't found time in my busy life to do it.
Right. And you also are the founder of Valley Fermenters, which is the oldest homebrew club in the country.
No, New England.
New England.
New England.
Oh, crap. I better edit everything I've been saying all these episodes. Jesus. Okay, that's Charlie. Dan. Okay, good.
All right. And then from HardCiderReviews.com in Utah, we have Matthew Ostrander. And then now Michelle Foyk is the captain at the store, so I'll be working with Michelle. She organizes all of the actual logistics of getting the ciders out to the judges and back, It's an amazing job that she does.
She is like a nonstop energizer battery.
She is. She's a bunny.
And on top of all this, she just opened up the Aris Brewery and Cider House in Chicago. So it's a brand new spot to get cider and beer. They have a restaurant. So kudos to her. I know she's been working really hard on that for the past couple of years. They did it.
And Mike Beck, Uncle John's Cider in Michigan. Mike is the event logistics and admin lead.
Really nice guy. Past president of the United States Association of Cider Makers, so he just stepped down from that role. And Mike Beck has been coming to Cider Days out in Massachusetts for, I don't know, how many years, Charlie? Do you remember?
Well, we've been going on 23 years, so he's probably come, I'd say almost last 20 years? No, more than four.
Yeah.
No, 24.
Oh, he's come to all of them?
No, he hasn't.
Approaching the 24.
Oh, I know that.
Cider days.
He came when we had like the first salon in Old Deerfield, and so he's been really integral part of cider in the U.S.
Great to see him, but I see him in a fleeting moment, and then he's gone the rest of the weekend somewhere else.
We're going to be seeing Mike tonight at a cider dinner at Uncle John's. I'm really excited to go to that see that site.
And the cellar master for the event is Brian West. And working with Brian, one of the cellar men, is Jeffrey Cottrell. Yep. Both, well, Jeffrey's from Michigan and Brian's from Indiana.
And I believe that's it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about having a sense of where the judging panel is from, Canada is very well represented, but typical of any competition, sort of the regional profile of whatever the drink you're assessing, in this case cider, will be reflected by your panel of judges. So if it's predominantly Michigan, they are going to have an influence to the entire categories about how those are perceived here. They will have a big influence in the final choices we make for first, second, third, and every category. But since you have such a large influx of Ontario judges and people like ourselves come from Massachusetts, those lines are blurring more. So I think that...
Throw some ripples in the water.
Yeah, so I think that makes it... it's not unfair, but it is a chemistry of competitions. It does reflect the battery of people who live closest to the site of the judging and what their regional preferences are and perceptions of what exists within each category. So, but I think, again, those lines are blurring.
But it's a true factor that plays into it. You know that those Michiganians are really rooting for their Michigan cider makers, but they're not going to be, you know, so subjective that they would vote for one over the other, and you don't know what it is until the end.
Well, you can tell because of the high acid.
Well, you know, so let's just talk about the difference in apples and stuff, because in Michigan, which apple is the number one fruit produced, the number one commodity in that way, they have a lot of culinary apples. And what we've been finding is that what they consider heritage is a little unique. They are looking at, like, apples that were here for a long time and considering them heritage versus what would be the classic descriptor of a heritage apple?
Oh, boy.
A cultivar that is
100 years.
Well, we're using in New England some of the apples that actually antique. Came about in New England. Look at Roxbury Russ. It's a good example of that.
All
Westfield
Rhode
Seek
Island
No
Green.
Further. Rhode Island Greening. So the actual heritage of the apple comes from the region, and some of them are 300 or more years old. So, you know, I'm not going to argue what came first, the chicken or the egg, or whether this apple came from Kazakhstan, but, you know, you make use of what apples you have in the region, and it basically is reflected in the final ciders. Again, that line is going to be blurred with more cultivars being introduced, grafting, the discovery of certain pippins, and this is going on everywhere. So I really think this is a very dynamic area, what's going to be reflected in the final ciders, and right now it reflects what's there. And yeah, you know, it's, but you know, there's 1400 plus entries from all over the world, you know, there's, you know, and it's all done anonymously. Let's face it, it's going to be very difficult to say, yeah, that cider is from here. And, you know, I know a lot of judges have said this to me, and I say it to other people. I've been fooled thinking something is mine or some other cider maker's, and find out after the event it wasn't even close. It was somewhere in another state, another region. So I'm not really worried about what exists there. We'll handle it well, and the dynamic will be there, and it'll change year to year.
You're asking about heritage and what makes what's a heritage apple versus not. If you can't find it in your grocery store, it's likely a heritage apple.
But what if you can't find it? Because some of the apples that they're using in Michigan are something that we might find in a grocery store.
Whole Foods? Like a Ashmead's Kernel? These are...
Well, yeah, probably not an Ashmead's Kernel. Yeah.
Now, that gave you a little bit of flavor for the Cider Chat Live, what I'm trying to do there. That was recorded on the early morning as we were heading into Grand Rapids. We were actually a couple hours still out because it was about, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning there. And, of course, we were all awake because it was a long night. So a great group of guys that I was traveling with, and that alone made it super special for me. Joby Wilson was driving. Charlie was riding as co-pilot. And William Grota was helping me read through the list of judges. And Mark Griska, who was in the back, is in charge of the Cider Days competition. That's a Franklin County Cider Days competition that takes place in conjunction with Cider Days each year on the first weekend of November. You can find a link in the show notes to Cider Chat Live in this year, episode 130, or go to all the different podcasts, libraries, and apps that you use to subscribe to that. I will be doing a Cider Chat Live next week while I am in Ontario. So you could check it out. We arrived on Tuesday because we had a lot going on. It's a filled week of all kinds of stuff, all surrounding cider. We arrived at Vandermill, which is based in, there's two locations, went to the Grand Rapids location because that was the landing ground, the staging area for GlenCap. And again, GlenCap stands for the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition. Mike Beck oversees GlenCap. And then Eric West is hired as kind of coordinating the competition. Jeff, also known as the Saginaw coach on social media, was there. I was a little disappointed that Jeff didn't just run up and give me a hug. I mean, you know, when people are kind of reaching out all the time, Jeff, you know, and being kind of fun and engaging on social media, you don't have to be shy when you we meet, I feel like I know you already. I expected a good Michigan bear hug at least. But, you know, people are shy. It's okay. I'm kind of a hucky person. I can't help it. Jeff Carlson was also there helping out, a good cider dude. And so they were setting that all up. Dave, who works at Vandermill. I met Paige, who works at Vandermill. Lovely woman. And what a location that they have. It's stupendous. So they have a restaurant upstairs, an amazing kind of swag area. And the thing that we noticed at Vandermill is that everyone was so nice. Holy cazoli. Everyone's so nice. And that stands out. So that speaks volumes of the people in that area and who are working there. So way to go. So we hung out a bit with Paul. He showed us how to use the cider taps. And then I proceeded to try to hide myself in the cidery that night so I wouldn't have to leave. But, you know, we had to leave. What are you going to do? And so we did. We headed out from Vandermill. Checked into our different locations. We kind of, you know, did it as if we were a religious sect. The guys stay in one house and then the girls in another. So the guys all went to their pad and I was able to stay with Michelle McGrath, who's the executive director of the United States Association of Cider Makers. Did I say that right? United States Association of Cider Makers, yes. And then Michelle Pagano, who is also known as the Brew Babe. Michelle, I think I might have mentioned this before, is no longer able to drink beer because she's gluten intolerant. So now she's all over cider. So that's really neat. And she has a lot of enthusiasm. She's from Long Island. And then Darlene Hayes, who's from California, and she has a blog, All Into Cider. She wrote a book, Cider Cocktails. And I did have Darlene on the podcast, so you want to listen to that episode because she was making cider cocktails, and yeah, we were getting toasted on cider cocktails. It was delicious. So I was able to stay at this house with these three women. It was such a bonus to kind of get to know these folks at a deeper level. And then the guys were staying across the river because you must separate the two. That evening, we got ourselves back into the van and drove an hour east to St. John's, Michigan to go to Uncle John's Hard Cider because Mike Beck had invited us for dinner and by hook or by crook, we were going to go. We were all jazzed up. I had never been there and, oh my goodness, I want to say we were there in Michigan during apple blossom season and just thinking about being at Uncle John's now almost brings tears of joy to my eyes. It was surreal, happy. As we landed, we saw all these people we knew. I immediately saw Nicole Ward of Forgotten Cider. She's only like, she and Rafe are only based about an hour north of St. John's. And they were on episode 74. These people are so lovely. If you recall, they have 16 acres and over 1,000 varieties. And I opened up the door to the van and there she was like standing with two red-fleshed ciders. One is the Red Queen, and the other one is the Mad Russian. And just seeing that and knowing that we'd be able to get a sip of that just, you know, makes your jaw drop. So super happy to immediately jump out of the van, give her a hug, say hi. You know, that's the way Ciderville is. Like, so many nice people just connecting in that way. I love it, I love it, I love it. And then I got to see Mike Beck and meet his wife, Dee, and family. It is like, there's places that you go in life that you know there's specialness there. And this is one of those places. The farm itself is just gorgeous. So there's going to be a lot of snapshots on the show notes. So check that out. I'm going to try to put together like a short little video. I'm pretty much guaranteed I will be doing that. So you'll be able to see that too. Probably also put it up on YouTube. But all the blossoms happening, really beautiful. We got to immediately see Brian, who's the cider director at the Northmen and Ambrosia. They had traveled down and were stopping there, and you know, lots of cider pouring. I was able to meet two Brits and actually sit down and have dinner with them. And that was Helen Thomas from Weston Cider. She was there to judge. And also Bob Chaplin, who is in charge of the Royal West and Bath competition that will be taking place, I believe, this coming June. It happens every year at this really huge and well-attended competition. So that was, that just, you know, what an opportunity. That's all I could say. What an opportunity to sit down and have their undivided attention while they're eating dinner. I don't know if they really want to sit down that long with me, but they did. Only kidding. I actually recorded a bit with Helen, and I'm hoping it is a good recording because it was on the bus and was kind of noisy. So we'll see how that goes. So that was taking place. And then before or after, Brian took myself and a couple of us out into the orchards in one of the four-wheelers and just drove around this orchard again, like felt like miles of apples, all in full blossom. I mean, if you get that opportunity wherever you are in the world to take time in the orchard, smell the blossoms, and just take in the sights and sounds, you know that there is beauty in the world and all is great and good. Got to hang out in the tasting room. Lots of cider was pouring. He's been in business for a while, he and his family. I'm not sure if it's his parents or Dee's parents that have their own home on the farm. I have a feeling it's on Mike's side of the family. Just like salt of the earth people. And how gracious. He was just like handing out boxes to everybody and saying, take cider. Now, I actually was so turned on to the apple vodka that I just had to get a bottle of that. And Mike, of course, graciously gave me a bottle of apple vodka. And you don't even need to drink vodka, just to pour it in the glass and sniff it. Actually, I think I need a reminder. So I'm going to open this bottle. I have it right here. And let's pour a little bit in because you only need just a wee bit. That's just a wee bit, believe me. Let me put that cap back on because it's kind of close to my setup here, and that would be a bummer. Now, let me first just talk about the bottle as this sits in the cup, and I'm swirling it around because I really want to get that scent. It's a clear glass bottle, so you can see right through. I can see my hand on the other side. It says on the top, Uncle John's Fruit House Winery, and it has this white, kind of grayish silver tree. And it's a very swirling apple tree, and in the middle, at the top, it has this nice red apple. I'm going to take a photo of this bottle. It says, vodka from apples, distilled from apples. It's 43% alcohol by volume, or is this saying 86? It's so tiny. I can't even see those tiny little letters. Somebody's able to read that, not me. I swirled around, and oh, man, I've never had vodka distilled from apples. Maybe the other people are doing this. I'd love to hear about that, but I don't even need to actually drink it just to smell it. It's as if you were putting up your nose to that like perfumey apple blossom, and it's at that exquisite level when the blossom is in perfect heightened bloom, and you get that floral scent, and you know that there is indeed a heaven. And then, of course, sipping it is not bad either. Let's take a little sip because, oh, what the heck, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. And the apples there, it's really delightful. I'm going to just treasure this bottle. I also received two other bottles from Mike. These are, one is a grape wine with honey added, piment. That's a 10.5%. It's kind of interesting with that. It was a Michigan white wine with local honey. Creates this semi-dry floral white wine with hints of honey and tropical flavors. And then I like this saying, by drinking local wines, you help support your Michigan farmers. Right on to that. There's a series of these 750ml wines that he has, and the label is stunning. It has a honeybee in the center with a black background. We'll have a photo of that too. And the second bottle I have in my hand, again, is 750ml, 10.5%, is a sizer. And they're calling it apple honey wine. Now, there's different levels of sizer. I make a sizer. I don't really consider it a wine because anytime I add honey to apple juice and ferment it, I consider it a sizer because I'm fermenting the honey with it. So I'm not sure, you know, a little variations is okay on how we take it. But it again says here, farm-grown apples fermented with local honey creates this fresh, semi-dry wine with hints of melon, honey, and spice. And again, by drinking local wines, you help support your Michigan farmers. And I like supporting farmers like Mike Beck and his family. That evening after he filled us up and he actually handed me this giant magnum, I thought it was Perry, but it was one of his heirloom blends. I mean, a magnum of it, fresh out of the cooler, to bring back. That's come back to Massachusetts. We're going to be sharing that with our club here. So that'll be really nice to turn people on to some heirloom blends from Michigan. Anyways, made it back, totally dropped flat, and woke up the next morning bright and early. I mean, I don't know what they think about this. I mean, is there something in Ciderville where people are like, go, 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 go? Can't we just stop and smell the apple blossoms? No. In this case, we can't because it was a full list. We were doing cider tours all day, and just give me a pause here to take another sip of this delicious little apple vodka, and we'll get back to what we did on Wednesday. Wednesday was the first day that the judges and all the folks involved in GlenCap were kind of gathering, and it started at 7:30 in the morning in front of the hotel where the competition was taking place. And we left immediately to head out to the People's Cider, which is in Grand Rapids, a really cool neighborhood. Highly recommend going to this place. It is owned by Jason Lumen, who I didn't get the chance to totally talk to. I did hang out with him later on Thursday night. That was fun. Playing a little bocce ball. Good times. But what Jason does, he does a lot of barrel ferment ciders. And, you know, you walk in and there's a barrel right on the bar. That is super cool. I love it. And everybody was just raving about his cider. So I hope to have more about that and meet up with Jason again. Then from there, we got back onto the bus and headed just a stone's throw away to Robinette's Orchard and Cider Mill. And this is kind of an interesting little piece, a tidbit, because this is a orchard that is right in Grand Rapids, and it's so unique. And I'm thinking, where else do I know in the world where you could be in a city and then be in an orchard at the same time, a working orchard that is making cider and wine? And I'm going to let you hear a little bit from them that I recorded, some little snippets of conversations that I had along the way. And you could get, I think from this, a good view of Robinette's Orchard and Winery.
Mike said we've been here since 1911. We've been making hard cider for 10 years now, I think.
Good job.
This is my son, Alan.
11 years.
Fifth generation. 11 years we've been making hard cider.
We're in the cellar right now. Mm-hmm. It's all like that field stone with cement.
Yeah.
Was it dry stone? And
yeah.
And then you put in the packing around it.
We had to redo that in 1985. We redid the mortar, the
and
joints.
What are the beams that you... What kind of wood? Oak, okay.
Yeah, right from right here on the property.
And it's all with the bark on it,
too. They kept
the
bark on it. Wow. And it's all original.
Wow, that's... A dairy barn originally, maybe?
No, this was a fruit farm right from the start. So
no
this
kidding.
Was horse... This is where they kept their horses. For working the farm.
Yeah, for working the farm.
So if they had a cow, it was just one or two for their own use.
How many acres do you have? Because, you know, we're driving in, I could see apple trees across the street. So
yep.
I'm assuming that's
we have 135.
135.
And about half of that is usable for fruit growing.
And how many varieties do you...
We're over 40 now.
Over 40. Okay.
Yeah.
Busy time here in the spring, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of speaking a bit with Alan Robinette, and he really inspired me. Here's a young man. He's getting married this year, and just is like filled with vim and vigor and excitement over apples. The Robinettes are a really lucky family to have what they have there.
Out of the little plantings, just to give them a chance to.
So we're at the Robinettes. We just took the apple cider, which is a big old, I don't know, wagon with seats with the cider tour folks from all over the map. And right now we're talking about deer, the problem that they have here. They're so thick that they have to really do super duper management for the deer. Let's go in and see if we can get a little bit on the story.
Yeah. It's going to attack during bloom, which, you know, this coming weekend is going to be critical. I'm going to have to spray either tonight or tomorrow night for fire blight this weekend. Temperature is going to be in the 80s, which means the bacteria can build rapidly. and all you need is a little wedding event. So Saturday, Sunday is going to be a rain. And the problem with varieties like this, we've got several varieties here, and the bloom span is over weeks. And so I might spray for fire blight and think I've got it all covered, and some down there don't bloom for another 2 weeks. And if I don't get back and protect them, they'll get fire blight when I don't even know what's happening, because we think it's over.
So what kind of spray do you use?
There's streptomycin, and then there's MicroShield, which is a bactericide, and then there's a new one called Casumin that we can use. So they're bactericides. And you've got to get it on at just the right time. It's got probably last you for 48 hours because flowers are constantly opening. And so you're susceptible to fire blight the whole time there's a new flower without that protection on.
Throughout this day, while I was hanging out with folks all over the map, I was trying to take advantage of mini recordings. So here's one with Ben Conley from Beaver Valley Orchard and Cidery in Kimberley, Ontario. I mentioned Benjamin last week at Cider Chat because he really endeared himself to me when he told me that every time on Cider Chat when I say, grab that glass and get ready. Well, they are up there in Ontario doing just that and listening to Cider Chat. So let's listen in a little bit on this conversation with Ben Conley of Beaver Valley Orchard and Cidery.
Now, are you a cider maker? And we're going to move down here.
We're
on the cider wagon at Robinette's.
I tried making two batches in 2016 and 2017, and the first batch didn't go so well. Didn't taste.
I appreciate your transparency. You know, because that happens to everybody. I mean, the first batch of cider I made didn't go so well.
Yeah.
And sometimes, more often than not, that happens to me. But I'm not a commercial maker, so you know, you kind of work.
Well, I'm just kind of learning as I go.
Yeah, that's great.
I made a batch last year, and I tried to bottle condition it, but I prematurely bottled it.
Ooh,
the cider tasted quite nice.
I learned that John Mott and his wife Judy, I believe her last name is Cornwall. They are in charge of Beaver Valley, and John is the head cider maker. And Ben was really transparent, which, again, I really appreciated, you know, talking about just kind of working through cider. And I think that's reassuring for all of us who try our hand at cider, that it's not as easy as it seems. And you just got to be persistent and keep going back at it. Beaver Valley is in an area called Gray County, and I learned something a little bit more, that it's called the Georgian Triangle. So that was kind of neat. And that area is really starting to happen for Ontario, Canada, which just enthralls me more knowing that next week, or while you are listening to this podcast, I will be in Ontario. Not as high as that area, but getting a nice taste of that region and having the ability to highlight Canadian cider makers. Now back to Michigan. From there, we headed then to Vandermill for lunch. And of course, Paul Vanderhyde did not disappoint. We had a wonderful tour of that facility that I talked about earlier. We had a delicious lunch. And again, the servers were fantastic. I did put up some photos from that experience, a nice group photo too. Again, get a chance to visit that location or the Spring Lake location also. Then it was on to Ridge Cider to meet up with Matt DeLong. And it was a little bit of a drive there, but the trip alone was really worth it for the apple blossoms. All along, we were driving up along the ridge, and everything was in full bloom. If that doesn't like set your heart soaring, I don't know what can. And I did get a chance to meet Christine Walters of Ballman Cider out in Oregon. And I thought I recorded a chat with her, but I can't find it. So at some point, I'm going to record a chat with this gal. She is doing some amazing work at the cidery there, this family farm that is really initially like a huge kind of almost looks like a Disneyland to go and bring your family. And then she got the idea to start making cider. Now, I haven't had any of Christine's cider, so that's going to provide me with the opportunity to sit down with her again and do a better recording with not so much bus chit-chat and noise in the background, because you know what happens when a lot of folks in the cider trade are riding on a cider tour bus? Well, there is a lot of cider on that bus happening, and it gets wild. And after all that, we had one more stop, and oh, that was equally lovely, because behind this cidery was an orchard, again, in full bloom, and they don't really have a tasting room. We got to go into their, like, behind-the-scenes tasting room for family and friends only, and I'm going to just let Andy take it away and give you a little bit of an intro here, and you could try to figure out who this cidery is.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
I'm Andy Schaefer. This is my brother Chris.
Hello.
And Uncle Mark. And welcome to our farm here. We've got the orchard around this is all ours right here. This is about 75 acres. We've got about another 200 acres scattered throughout the countryside that we have here. But this is the ancestral farm that our family homesteaded in the 1850s. And so we've been here ever since, and it's been family owned the whole time. A number of years ago, we just kind of got in our heads that it'd be cool to do cider, as well as grow a whole bunch of cool heirloom apples. So the heirloom varieties are basically all the smaller stuff straight back from the building here, if you guys want to check that out. We've got about 100-some varieties of heirloom stuff.
On this table here, I got two pamphlets, and it's kind of our varieties we're growing right out in the cider block behind.
Yep. If you've got any questions about the apple varieties and that stuff, you got to talk to those guys, because there's only so much information that each of us can handle. So we each have our own part here. But yeah, this is our production space over here. Storage in back, which is kind of a mess, so unless you really want to see it, you can bribe one of us, maybe we'll open the door. Other than that, I haven't got anything else. You guys got anything?
We've been doing it for about 4 years.
Yeah, about 4 years we've been playing around with it here. So
that was Andy Schaefer speaking, and Uncle Mark Schaefer, and they have the Schaefer Cider Company, which is based in Conklin, Michigan. And their brand is spelled P-U-X, and I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, actually. I think it's Pux. Lovely guys, you know, really happening scene there. The whole family was happening. It was a good scene, and that was our final destination of the day, and it was probably the perfect place to end. From there, we all headed back. We had a little tiny window of opportunity to get a bite to eat, and then it was heading back to the hotel to meet Charles McGonigal, who was having us go over the judging sheets because they're really working on it for this competition. And that was kind of interesting because they had us fill out the form, had us taste a couple ciders, and work through it so that everybody was on the same page. They were trying to get, if you can, kind of like calibrate the crowd to see where folks would be judging the actual cider so that there wouldn't be any extremes anywhere, because there's actually always extremes that happens in judging, even in this competition. But I thought it was a good thing that they did that, albeit difficult after being on a cider tour all day. So we had that opportunity to meet everybody once again, and then it was head back and take a rest, because the next day was Glencap. I was one of the first people to be at the breakfast that morning at the hotel, because I never turned down a free breakfast. And I got to sit down with Dee. Ben Watson had finally flown in from New England, and he was there too. I got to see Louisa Spencer from Farnham Hill. Brian Ritson was there sitting at my table, and it was just it's just so nice to see everybody. You know, it's like a love fest of happy people. Then the judges go out to see where their tables are. I went out to look at the sheet, and I found out that I was not judging. I guess they thought I'd be a better steward, so I stewarded, which was the first time I ever had that opportunity to steward a competition. All these years, I've always been judging. The steward scene was run by Michelle Foyk of Eris Cider House and Brewery in Chicago. And I just want to give her a big, big hell yeah. They did it there. She's been working on that project for a while. Michelle's really a big part of the Michigan scene. I think she used to work at Virtue Cider, knows a lot of connections there. I met her first out in Portland at CiderCon. So it was lovely getting to hang out with Michelle and Kat from Canada, Eric, who is helping me kind of learn the ropes of stewarding, and all the different people that I just adored you. We had the team. You know, it's interesting, though. The hard part for me of this competition was all the cider that was getting poured out. I kind of wish that there was more work with the homebrew clubs in the area. And I'm sure there's homebrew clubs, and we should probably, they're very beer dominated. This is a great opportunity to turn them onto that, to cap it, or if anything, that a nice thing to do would be to take, and this is true for any competition, even whether it's Glen Cap or whatever, is to take that leftover cider, maybe fine, again, homebrew clubs that would want it, or instead of pouring it out, to pour it out into buckets and then distill it. One of the things that I hear some competitions doing, that they're distilling it and then they give some of that distilled spirits to the judges the next year. So I think there's a lot of options. It's actually, it feels like nails on a chalkboard pouring out cider. And I know they have to go through that, but I would love to see a little bit more recycling and use of cider in that way. That, can I say it enough time? That was really tough for me. Even though at the end of Glen Cap, they take all the ciders that haven't been opened and they bring it back to Vandermill. And again, you could take whatever you want. And the New England team, I actually had to fly home, but the New England team did drive home and brought back a number of cases. But whatever was left there, does not get farmed out. And again, that's hard to witness or even to be part of, especially knowing that probably you listening sent your cider there. And for goodness sakes, at least get it to somebody. Somebody's going to want that cider. So always something to do. Put it on the plate. I did not get to record this competition. Before I depart from this topic on recording and judging, I want you to know why I'd like to do that. And I have done it already. If you go to the Cider Chat Live episode, you'll be able to hear how myself, Nicole Laban, Charlie Ochowski, and William Grota were judging at the Boston Homebrew Competition for the Cider Best in Show. I got a lot of great feedback from listeners saying, I didn't realize like this is what is going on. So whether you are a cider maker, but really speaking to the consumer's perspective, don't you want to know what's going on and why people are saying, hey, that's the best cider out there? Why? What makes you pick that one over others? That can only help, in my belief, the transparency of Ciderville across the board. And it's not something to kind of protect. It should be open to the press, and why not? I mean, if you think about a poker game on TV, it's quiet. People are just there playing and folks are riveted to the TV. Wouldn't it like up the game if we had cider competitions televised? Holy smoking Joe. That would be fantastic in my mind, because it would really provide a window into what makes a top quality cider. I don't know why that is just relegated to cider makers. It does not make sense. Now, I know that beer and wine does that, but cider is its own territory, and we could set our own stage here, and we should not be beholden to anyone else other than the cider community. So it's my hope to keep on doing that, and I'm planning on going to another competition soon that I hope to record and be able to bring that to you and really highlight that piece. Not to mention that when you put a recorder down in front of some judges, they're going to up their game to a whole other level, aren't they? And those commercial makers who are listening to this podcast right now, you deserve that. You deserve that quality of judging. And to know who those judges are, whether they are a brand new cider maker or someone who's hoping to become commercial who have never judged before. And that's my experience as a judge for, I don't know, 20 plus years. So I got to have a different view on it. And you could bet your bottom dollar that I am taking notes, and maybe I've been joking around that someday I'll write my own version of the Cider Confidentials, much like Anthony Bourdain did with the Kitchen Confidentials. So stay tuned for that. Let's head back to this this trip out to Michigan. One of the highlights of my time at Glen Cap in the evening was being able to record a conversation at a restaurant called Sovngarde. That's a place that has a bocce ball scene outdoors, a nice outdoor setting. And Rick, the owner, really nice guy, delicious food. And I got to sit down with Andy Sietsma of Sietsma Orchards and drink cider and eat food. It's the best way to have a conversation and to get to know this guy. What a delightful man. And even more so, a cider maker. We had, if I'm going to give you one tip, actually one cider that really stood out to me because I got to sit down with it. And that, you know, sometimes when you're judging, you're just going through multiple ciders. You don't get to salivate over it. But sitting down with somebody and having food just changes the whole paradigm. When they poured from the cask at Sovngarde this Maggie cider, it changed the day around, the whole experience. So if I'm taking home anything, it would be that cider knocked my socks off. So well done, Andy. That podcast will be going live as I fill in some of the cues from some of the final episodes from CiderCon. We'll get Andy out there and tell that story. If you find yourself in Grand Rapids, you're going to be one lucky person because there's so much cider there. Any bar that you go to, there's cider pouring, and it's a nice selection of ciders to be had, along with a great beer community, too. You know, sometimes, as Charlie says about Heirloom, you know, the line between beer and cider gets a little blurry, too, and that is often the same community of people, and they're all great people. One more thing I want to just add before I totally leave the Michigan scene is that next year I would love for Eric West, who works his little buttsy off to get this whole Glen Cap thing rolling, that somebody gets him a nice chair to sit down in that will help support his back, because, you know, you want to keep the guy happy. And I imagine if Eric's happy, then everybody else around him is going to be happy too. I saw a photo that was posted up for Eric, and he had a these plastic chairs that you kind of see everywhere in the area. Because actually Mike Beck, who brought us into this podcast originally, he was the first one who was announcing on the bus tour when we were rolling into this here episode 130, told me that Grand Rapids is known as a furniture city. So if it's furniture city, then how about getting the guy who's sitting at the computer all day putting all those entries in a good chair to relax in? And, you know, while I'm at it, I mean, he was at Vandermill. Everybody's so nice there. I bet Paul Vanderhyde has a really nice office chair he could roll down there and let Eric sit in, so he doesn't have to stack about five chairs to give himself a little bit of height and support. It's just, that was kind of comical to see. But in either case, it's all about cider, and I really appreciate all that Mike Beck did to get myself and Team New England out there. And what a time to meet so many wonderful people and have an opportunity to sip cider from so many different parts around, out and about in Ciderville. So check it out if you are ever in that area of West Michigan. And if you also get a chance to go to Glen Cap, I highly recommend that you do. Do your volunteer. If you're like a steward like me, it's a great opportunity. Or if you are a judge or whatever they need, show up early and help them pack the cider. It's all for a good cause in the end. And that's all about helping cider continue to keep going up. Having this little conversation with the folks over in Japan, Lee Reeve and Clive Pohl. Lee does the Insider magazine, and Clive is the owner of the Full Monty, which is a cider bar in Japan. Has a great selections of ciders from what I could see. And Lee was talking about, he put on Instagram a photo of a bottle of cider from Normandy, from Manoir d'April, and that might ring a bell because that's Agathe Letier. She was on Cider Chat, so you could Google that and find that episode, or just go to your podcast directory. I highly recommend it. She's a fabulous cider maker, and what I was asking them is if they had a chance to have her hopped cider, which is really made with the Manoir d'April cider base, which scales up all other cider bases. I mean, you know, we have that a lot in the modern cidery. A baseline cider uses a lot of culinary apples, but when you have your base cider, and not that it's just France that's doing this, you'll see this in other countries too that have an amazing selection of cider apples, it changes the whole paradigm for what a base cider could be, and then adding something like hops. And it was really the first hop cider that I know of in France. So super stoked to be able to share that experience with folks who are coming along with me on the Totally Cider Tour going out the last week of this year, September. That's just going to be fantastic to taste. And I'm really going to be curious what the other folks on the trip are going to be thinking about it. So I imagine we will follow up on that. And there is still time to come along if you'd like to. So just zap me a line, Rhea, at Cider Chat. I could give you some of the details at the Cider Chat website. Yeah, I hope, Clive, that you get to taste that hop cider. I do not think it's in the UK yet. I know that she is exporting to Japan, but I don't know about the UK, so that would be quite interesting to find out. Good luck on that quest for Manoir d'April. When this podcast goes live on Wednesday, I will be somewhere in Ontario traveling abroad with Ryan Monkman. Thanks to he and Field Bird Cider in Wellington, Ontario, for sponsoring me to get to Ontario. I'm going to be driving up my car, my old jalopy, and cruising along. And I'll be doing a little bit of Cider Chat live. I might throw in my guitar or something like that and sing you a couple songs along the way. Who knows? I can't make any promises, folks. You know, in Ciderville, anything can happen. But just know I will be thinking about you each time that I raise a glass and say a cheers to you. Going down the road in my jalopy now. Going down the road in my old car. Going down the road in my jalopy now. Oh, my old car, you know, I can go so far, I can go so far. And a big cheer to all the good patrons of this here podcast. There's been no one that has signed up to be a patron recently, so if you are finding value for this program, please do consider becoming a patron today. I'll be putting out a extended version of last week's episode with Carlo Hein of Ramborn Cider Company. That's going specifically to patrons. And you can become a patron for as little as $1 a month just to join into that fantastic community, both of commercial, non-commercial, just general consumers of cider. So thanks to you all. A big hug and a tip of the glass. is Rhea Wincoller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!